This is the meeting of the Minnesota Electronic Real Estate Recording Commission. Date is Thursday, August 18th, 2011. We have an agenda here for everybody if you would like to take a look at it. I do have three items that have come up here this week that I'm sorry, I'd like to add to the agenda. Item number one will be a new board member, a new commission member, pardon me. Item number two is AMC administrative support. And item number three, which I probably will include up with Mike Convery's report, and that's a discussion of possible legislation to move electronic recording forward more quickly in the state of Minnesota, and perhaps seeking legislation to enact something that would set a date in the future for that. So those are the three items to add to your agenda here for this afternoon. So with that, I'll go forward with taking a look at the minutes from last month. First of all, any other items to add to the agenda for any commission members? If not, let's go to the minutes from our last meeting, which was May. Comments, questions from any of the board commission members on the minutes? If not, I entertain a motion to approve.
I move that they be approved.
It's been moved. Do I hear a second?
I'll second it.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the minutes from May of this year. Any discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? They are approved. Item number four on the agenda is an ECRB update. I have to report that Jason is not able to join us today from the Department of Revenue, but I think included with the agenda materials was some information that came from Jim Biggs. Mm-hmm. He's been keeping most of us pretty well appraised as to what's going on with the CRB at the Department of Revenue, and I would tell you I am very excited about what I see going on. They have moved to a new version of the product here in this past month. They are telling everybody they plan to have the CRB ready to go live publicly in all counties throughout the state of Minnesota by December 1 of this year. And for those counties that have been very concerned with their assessors about the capability of being able to upload data from their systems into the state system or downloading information from the state system into local systems, they're working on that as well. They haven't given us a guarantee that that will be available by December 1, but they are working on it, and if it's not December 1, it will be shortly thereafter. So I think that's pretty exciting news to hear how things are going and so forth. So that was the update that we had from Jim Biggs on that. Any questions? Comments? If not, why don't we go on to our guests from the Minnesota Department of Health. We have in our packet some information that Mike Convery from the Department of Health has shared with us about how the electronic well certificate has been used throughout the state of Minnesota. Certainly for a lot of us, we were very excited to see those numbers and at the same time a little disappointed in seeing perhaps that they weren't bigger. So with that, Mike, I'll turn it over to you and you can share with us a little observation about it.
That's for the committee there. Yes, sir. I've also had this come out to the audience as well. Well, thanks very much for having us. With me is Kathy Dunaway. She handles the EWAL disclosure certificates on a day-to-day basis, deals with all the recorders and the filers and so forth. One of the handouts I gave you is a one-page, just a real summary. I just want to go through this maybe just for 1 minute, just to give you an idea how things are working, what kinds of problems that we're having, which are relatively minor problems in our minds. EWAL disclosure certificate came online in active use July 2009, so a little over 2 years ago. To date, we've had just over 200 electronically filed EWAL disclosure certificates. That's a certainly a relatively small number compared to the total that we've got, which I show there. In the last couple of years, we've been taking in just under 10,000 well disclosure certificates per year. So even at that, it's about no more than 1% are coming in electronically. Just to refresh maybe some of your memories, the way it works is for filers, and there are kind of three parties that are involved with this process. The filer, and it can be anybody, could be someone in their basement, could be a title company person, could be a property owner, closing agent. They simply register with us online. They complete the disclosure certificate online. They cannot proceed without completing it. The sketch map is one of the attachments that is scanned in and attached to the electronic well disclosure certificate. I know when we originally were talking about this that we were thinking of some sort of drawing routine that might be available. That turned out to be probably too much work than it was worth. Just a lot easier for someone to scan in and attach the document. Other documents that are typically attached include legal descriptions if they don't fill it out on the electronic well disclosure certificate. And sometimes they'll attach records, particularly well records of some kind. When they submit it online, they get an identification number, and that's the number that it could be entered on the deed when they go to file it online, or file the deed with the recorder, excuse me. That file the well disclosure certificate really sits in an on-deck circle. It has this number, but it sits out there for up to 120 days. After 120 days, it disappears. So the recorder has to take some action to validate that electronically filed well disclosure certificate within that 120-day period, or else it disappears. The worst thing that will happen is if they get to closing and discover that it's past 120 days, they can complete another one online right there. So it's not necessarily that everybody has to go home at that point and start all over again. For the recorders, when they, July 1st, all the recorders registered with us, they were assigned passwords. Their function really is when they're reviewing the deed, they see the identification number on the deed. They check in our system and see that indeed there is a well disclosure certificate sitting out there in the on-deck circle. They simply validate it, that it's entered, and then collect the fee. When we get it, once the county recorder validates it, it comes into our system. We review that usually the next day to just make sure it's complete. If there are problems, we then contact whoever the filer is. We don't go back to the county recorder. This, if anything, is an incentive for a county recorder to be an advocate for this system, we won't be sending back incomplete well disclosure certificates to you. Once we review it and everything looks fine, we then transfer it into our system. It appears on our website the next day. So it might be a day lag there from when the recorder acts on it to when it actually shows up on our publicly available system. Some of the problems that we've encountered, not surprisingly, with any sort of online system is password expirations, both for filers as well as recorders, but we work through that fairly easily. Probably a more serious problem is, although many times recorders may be viewing the deed documents, they neglect to take that last step and validate it. So it's still sitting out there in the on-deck circle, hasn't come into our system, and yet everybody thinks everything is, everybody involved up to that point thinks everything is fine. With the small numbers that we've had the luxury of checking to see what's any e-well disclosure certificates that are approaching the 120-day expiration point. Kathy will oftentimes check recorder websites, property record websites, to see if a closing had recently occurred. And there have been a few instances as well. Indeed, there was a closing. She contacts the recorder, and by the way, you still need to validate this. Yeah. Again, not a bad problem. It's very easily rectified at that point. If we were to get 10,000 of these a year, that we probably would be missing some of those. But at this point, it's been, as I said, we had the luxury of the low numbers. It enables us to kind of eyeball these things and follow up on them. We still get a few instances where we're getting still both an e-well disclosure certificate and a paper well disclosure certificate. And when we contact the folks involved, they say they didn't want to take any chances, so they're covering all their bases. Again, that probably really will be a chronic problem, I suspect, at least for the near future, but it's not a fatal problem. Always like to reiterate the primary goal, sort of the prime directive of well disclosure, is trying to get abandoned wells sealed. And right after the shutdown, we crossed the 250,000 point of the number of wells sealed. And when we looked at the statistics, well sealing just began to take off once this well disclosure process was established. So it's been very, in our mind, very successful. Some of you know this already. A few years ago, the state of Minnesota received an award from the National Groundwater Association for the state's well sealing program. And well disclosure is a big part of that. So we openly share the credit with reporters, with others in the real estate profession, and with well contractors as a collective effort in achieving this, in our minds, a big success. We have as many wells sealed in Minnesota as there are throughout the other 49 states, so we're viewed as real leaders in well sealing.
Mike, a couple of questions for you. Number one, did I understand that about 1% of all the well disclosures come in electronically? Is that what you said?
Correct, yeah.
Okay.
Over the past 2 years, we've had about 20,000 well disclosures. I think this 200 are electronically filed.
Would you prefer to have them electronic?
Well, I think so. I mean, the big issue it prevents, or big problem it prevents, is incomplete well disclosures.
Right.
So that's been the bane of us and a real nuisance to county recorders when we go back to them and say, by the way, some of these are incomplete. So we view that as really cleaning up that that particular problem.
Yeah.
And I guess we view it as inevitable that everything is, I mean, that was clearly the directive a few years ago when this all started, that we're heading down the electronic path.
Right. Right. Further question, what would happen if all of a sudden in the next year 100% of the well certificates were coming in electronic? What impact would that have on your office, and how would you handle that?
Well, I don't know if we would handle it a whole lot differently. I kind of have some doubts whether the state would go 100%. I mean, from what we hear, there will probably still be people who would need to, want to go the paper route. But you know, we certainly would not oppose that. I think we could adjust. We actually adjusted our paper process as we were developing the electronic system here so that the two follow each other, that they parallel each other. We had to make some adjustments to the way we handle our processes we use to handle the paper side of things so that it matched the electronic system.
I think as far as from a data entry standpoint, we wouldn't be handling the papers as they come in the office. We would hand stamp a number on each one and then hand write that number on all the attachments, remove the staples, paper clips, whatever. Do all the data entry, and then hand scan all the paper and index the scanning that was taken place, and then verify the indexing that was done. When the well disclosure certificates come in electronically, what we do is we look on a double screen. On one screen, we've got we're looking at the image of the well disclosure certificate that was submitted. And then we've got our database open. And we make sure that the way that it was typed by the filer is the way that our standards are. I mean, everybody's office has a standard procedure for how they do their data entry so that it can be retrieved in the future. An example, First Street. We type First Street as F-I-R-S-T. Postal Service is 1-S-T. So a lot of people submitted a street address as 1-S-T. We then change it to first at BYRST. So we do any of those types of changes, and then we'll look at the total number of wells disclosed and then view the sketch map. If they disclose two wells and I can see two wells on the sketch map, it's done. It goes through. We're not handling the paper. We're not doing the scanning and that. If there's some follow-up that needs to be done, we flag that one, and then we contact the filer to get the information that was missing submitted to us. And that's a little bit more of a, you know, a lengthier process.
But it eliminates a lot of our data entry, obviously. So
right.
We're still reviewing every entry field, though, to make sure that everything was entered correctly.
Right. Right. Go ahead.
So really what you're thinking, though, is that some you'll still have submitters in the paper world because of that they're recording this on their own as an individual and getting this document, or... if it's available online, which is it available online to the, say that just a general public for an interim draft?
Yes,
so
yes,
they could, so anybody could go out there and do it. So
correct,
you could refer them to
if
that.
If they have internet access.
Right. Mm-hmm. Which is something I think recorders cringe at when we have somebody come up and said, here's my draft, I drafted this document. And I think we all cringe at those because we know. I think that would help you guys better too, because we could miss things on that paper.
Oh, absolutely.
So,
yes. The three main reasons why well disclosure certificates, the paper ones, are still being returned to county recorders is the buyer's name or mailing address is not identified. The signature is not there. The status is not there, or there are multiple statuses checked. When submitting it electronically, we've got it set up that those errors can't occur. Granted, they could put in a fake name and just, you know, letter, number for an address, but we haven't come across any of those yet.
I think, too, that your concern with, and I understand the recorder issue and having a staff person not do that extra step. I mean, it happens. I can see it happening. Certainly not my office, but I could see it happening. And also on the title side too, submitting one electronically, and because of trust and security and all of those things, they want to make sure this is no rejections happen whatsoever. But couldn't that also simply be because we don't have the volume in here?
Once we get
the volume in, it's just a matter of practice on both parts that would be cleared up pretty quick.
I would say
even just a slight increase to get to maybe 2% volume would start making some changes.
Yeah, right now they're so rare for most counties that the process is not an automatic process for staff. So I think if this becomes part of the regular procedure, then we'll know to remember to hit that validity. And if it becomes part of their standard procedures in the office, they will remember that.
I also find it interesting because I think this system is so good, and it happened quickly and it was streamlined, and I think everybody was really supportive of it right away. And you educated. I mean, I was talking with Jeff Carlson the other day, and he made the comment that he overheard somebody say, oh, yeah, they've been at the prep groups a couple times now already. Like, yeah, I heard that story before. Well, that's good. So you've definitely been out, you know, educating people on this. So we somehow need to increase that volume. Yeah.
One of the other handout I gave you was just a listing as current as of today of which counties have submitted well disclosure certificates. And we find it encouraging that that some of the smaller counties, like Kansas Ohio County, is way ahead of the pack in terms of numbers. So it's not something necessarily that only big counties can do, but small counties can do. It really reflects interest, and interest of even just a few people to really promote it.
You've got one company there that does all of them that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But nobody else does, obviously. Have you ever considered seeking legislation at some point in the future, making electronic submission mandatory?
No, we haven't thought that far ahead, I don't think. And we always consider ourselves pretty much of a small aspect of the whole recording picture, so mm-hmm. we always felt like we were worried that we were falling too far behind a few years ago.
I'm really in the bag right now. Yeah.
So we will go along with whatever the recording world, wherever the recording world goes, but I don't think we anticipated that we would be the ones that will be demanding that the whole state go electronic.
Yeah.
In some ways, we don't mind going at this slowly because it enables us to adapt to it.
Adapt to.
Although this is a little slower than we
anticipated.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, just on my behalf, and I think on our commission, as far as recorders go, we're certainly impressed with what you've done over the last few years. I remember when a few years ago, you were further behind than I was. And for some people here, they know that wasn't good. And when you'd send things back to us that was from 18 months or 2 years prior, and we really just didn't have any fresh memory of any of that sort of thing back at that point. Now, if we ever get anything back to you, which is rare, it's something that happened in the last month. That's it. And being as current as that, I think it's a huge accomplishment on your part. You've taken the steps to do that, and I think everybody appreciates it. And it's reflected in what you've been able to accomplish, and for that I commend you and keep up the good work. We can keep you working 12 months a year instead of 11. Anyway, very much. I would ask if any of my other colleagues have any other questions. Otherwise, I was going to ask if you would like to stay, because I'd like to bring up this topic about the possibility of the commission to consider seeking legislation to, at some point in the future, at least on the recording side, have it mandated that counties have the option, provide the option for people to be able to record electronically or in paper form. And we've talked about it would be nice if the CRB and the well certificate were mandatorily be able to be done electronically. But we wanted to find out where you all were at, whether you'd ever be interested in pursuing that type of legislation collectively, and to see kind of where industry's at. And they have a little dialogue as some precursor for at least exploring what might be done to at least stimulate electronic recording, electronic well certificate, electronic CRVs in the state of Minnesota to move it along a little more quickly than what we have seen today. So that's kind of what we want to have a little discussion about.
Yeah, certainly we'll stay. I mean, some of those decisions are well beyond my pay grade in terms of what we pursue for legislation or even support for legislation, but I think generally, we would be supportive of expanding ECRBs, EWLs, well certificates.
So. Okay. Well, good. Any other questions for commission members? Well, thank you very much. Yep. Appreciate it, both of you. Very informative, always. Well, I'm going to bring up this possibility of seeking legislation. As I think we met last, one of the topics that we were going to discuss at the Recorders Conference was, where are the recorders at in terms of moving forward with electronic recording, and how would they react if, at some point in the future, a date was selected where they would have to offer electronic recording in their county? And with a very few exceptions, I don't think there was much concern about that. There's a few exceptions that probably are a little more vocal about that. I don't think that that should be mandated on them. And, you know, we can identify a number of reasons for why that is, and I don't think we need to spend a lot of time about that. But I think when we last met, we had some discussion about, does the commission have the authority to be able to do that? And I think, number one, we have sought at least some informal advice at this point. I've talked with Bert Black, reviewed the statute with Bert in terms of whether the commission does have authority to mandate a date in the future when we could electronically mandate counties to provide an option for electronic recording. And Bert doesn't read the statute as giving us authority. Jeff Carlson's also met with Eileen Roberts to do the same thing with Eileen. Interestingly enough, they've both come to the same conclusion that as much authority as we have, that is not one of the authorities that we do have. So the question I think I throw out for some discussion among commission members is, if we wish to pursue this in the future, we probably will have to seek legislation. We probably do not have the authority as a commission to set a standard in terms of that type of date. And I guess I'd be interested in perhaps a little discussion among commission members about, is that prudent? When would it be prudent, if you think it's prudent? And probably hear some discussion from some of our partners, be it the title industry, and I was hoping Eileen would be here today and hear a little bit about where the Bar Association might be as well. And then also some of our index vendors in terms of the capability of being able to deliver to all your customers if we pick a date in the future, and how far out does that need to be, and that type of thing. So that's what I'd like to at least have a dialogue, and I'd turn it over to commission members first with thoughts and comments and observations or other questions you may have.
Do we have to do a special appointment for Larry? Do we have to do a special swearing-in initiation?
Well,
golly,
maybe we better do that. Thank you, ma'am. The other item on our agenda that I failed to do is we have a new commission member. Larry Delane was formally appointed this week by Pam Heron, the president of the Minnesota Association of County Officers, to fill the statewide county auditor-treasurer position on the commission. Jeff Walker, who some of you know, we've not had the wisdom of his input here during the past year, and he's not been able to participate, sent a very touching letter saying he apologized for letting us down, was sorry that he had not been able to join us for the past year, and was very wishful that another appointment be made. And Pam Heron selected Larry because he had volunteered to do this about a year ago, just before she appointed Jeff Walker. And I did tell him that he was certainly high on the list of the short list of those that would be a good appointment, and we wouldn't have to do a lot of education in catching him up. I usually view that Larry has been the one that's been catching most of the commission up on what the subcommittees have been doing. So with that, Larry, I welcome you to the commission.
Well, thank you. If I would have known it was going to be this easy, I would have done it a long time ago.
Be careful what you volunteer for.
Can't be any worse than what we've already been doing.
Good. Good.
So thank you. I appreciate the opportunity, and I'm happy to be formally involved now instead of informally. It should be fun.
Wonderful.
I don't really know how long my appointment is, though. Does anybody know that? So
well, you fill out the appointment.
Is it like for 10 years? Or
yeah, I think the appointment goes by years.
Whatever the term was that Jeff had left, and I don't remember.
One
that.
More year.
One more. Oh, I can handle
it. Well, then it's
4 years.
I think you have 3 years left, Larry. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
There's no good behavior.
I didn't know I signed up for that long. Okay.
So back to the other
topic. Back to the other topic.
Great.
So let's, and again, any commission members with thoughts on that particular topic of pursuing legislation, when, advantages, disadvantages, and then we'll open it to the audience for comments from some of the rest of you as well.
So if I understand correctly, you're proposing to just have a date certain in which counties would be all have to be able to accept documents electronically, not heading towards having all documents electronically
no.
at this point.
Okay. No. Just getting to the point where I think carrying out the mandate, which I think started back in 05 with the fee bill, mm-hmm. where we had funds put aside, and one of the principal things it was put aside for was to be able to electronically record. I think up until the past year or two, there hasn't been as much momentum, and perhaps to some degree as much interest on the part of some of the submitters in our community. But it's clearly there at this point. Mm-hmm. And I think in order to facilitate and move that forward, that's the question. Would identifying a date at least get all the counties preparing to move forward, would make every submitter knowing that they will have the option to record electronically in the future at every county, and will speed up the implementation in those that were looking at doing it in the next year or two, and they might do it faster.
I think the other question comes in is that we need to have the well certificate and the ECRV attached to that process, and then if we are going to go into any legislation, and we're going, let's do it all at once, including not only some type of changing the word from may to shall in our standards right off the bat, because if we don't have, if the commission has no voice or cannot say anything to counties to say you have to accept all doc types versus just the pick and choose ones, if we can't be able to say that, then we really have lost a lot of our, we're only just for recommendation, and I think we need to have a little more clout, particularly if we're pursuing legislation with the ECRB and the UL certificate. So I think there's four topics there, those two with the attachment documents and the changing of the statute from the may to shall or some other language that enforces what standards, type of standards that anybody this is, and then the date of enactment, which if you're the, if you do it like the EUL does, you could do that like yesterday and enforce it the day before we have notification of it.
What I think we have the authority as a commission to do is we could establish that if you're going to record electronically, you must submit an electronic well certificate. We've got the authority to do that now. If you're going to record electronically, you must submit an electronic CRV. I think we've got the authority to set that as a standard for electronic recording. We don't have the authority to mandate that counties must make electronic recording option available for customers to use. That's the piece we don't have the authority. The other items, we do have the authority to set those standards now. So I think it gets down to just the one issue, and we can deal with the other ones, whether we choose to or not.
It kind of depends on what Kay is talking about. I'm not exactly sure. Are you talking about having all CRVs and all well certificates submitted electronically, whether the people record on paper or electronically at a county, or are you just talking about what Mike just said? There's two different things mm-hmm. there.
Right. That's not for our call. That's for Wells and Revenue and Health to decide on that. But if it's an e-record document, it should be submitted that way versus on paper. But I do kind of question the comment about we do have the authority to tell another county that you have to accept only an online well certificate, because right now we're accepting an ECRV that is in paper format, and yet we may accept electronic documents.
That's because we haven't had an electronic CRV. That's why we haven't dealt with that as a requirement up to this point. We've allowed people to submit paper, make scanned copies of them, and
right.
do all sorts
right.
of workarounds. But once the CRV is available statewide, that will be a topic I think we need to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Whether we choose to go there or not is another question, but I think that is within the purview of the authority to set that as a requirement. Mm-hmm. And me, as one commission member, would be inclined to think that should be mandatory. If you're going to record electronically real estate
right.
documents, I think you should submit CRVs and well disclosures electronically for recording as well. Now, that will probably escalate the amount of activity that gets done in the well area and in the CRV area electronically. Now, I can tell you all that in discussions with the Department of Revenue, they have discussed at some point in the future seeking legislation that would mandate CRVs to all be done electronically. I know in talking to my county assessor, who tells me in talking to most of the assessors in the metro area, there is a great desire that once they've got the well certificate done to everybody's satisfaction, they would like to see CRVs, not well. Once the CRV is done to their satisfaction, they would like to see CRVs all mandatory electronically. Now, whether that's true about wells and where health is at, I figured, Mike, you guys had probably never thought about that issue up until dumping it on you here today.
Right.
So something for thought and think about.
Mike, do you
yes.
know I think I've heard that in does Wisconsin require that their transfer tax document recorded with deeds, is that required to be done electronically?
Yes. It's the only way you can do it.
It's the only way you can do it, right?
Yeah.
So,
and it was a bitter pill to swallow, but now that it has been swallowed, everyone absolutely loves it.
As just a matter of doing a transfer.
And Scott, how did that come about? Was that legislation?
No. Well, yes. I'm sorry. It was.
Was it on the part of the
It was developed. It was a site, a product, developed by the Department of Revenue over between 6 months and
It was about a two-year total implementation period.
But they rolled it out to some pilot counties first, and then they had a drop-dead date. I think it was July 1st of, this is 11, probably 9.
Nine.
July 1st of 09, that you this was your only way to do it.
And do you know, was that legislation sponsored by the Department of Revenue for Wisconsin, or was
it? It was a cooperative movement between the Department of Revenue and the Registered Deeds Association.
Okay.
I know they had a committee formed as part of that, and banking, title, Register of Deeds, and revenue was on it.
Okay.
But you, once that came about, the percentage of increase of electronic documents in counties has gone up in a fairly profound way.
Yeah. My reading in the Revenue Department's authority is they do have the authority to mandate electronic CRVs, but they've also told me that they would not choose to do so administratively. They would prefer to have the legislature enact public policy in that form and not to choose to do an administrative action of that nature. Yes?
I think, at least at one time when I checked the DOR statutes on the CRV, I think the statute mandates the paper form at this point, doesn't it?
Does it?
I don't think they've changed any of their
statutes.
They haven't changed any statutes, so they are going to have to go in to do some cleanup work on this.
That's the case. I may not be recalling that accurately, but I think there is something specifically.
Yeah, because nothing came through this year, and I know they talked about it last year. I think we were reviewing it a year ago. We were reviewing some of their legislation. And there was no action this year by them, so it's probably just the same.
I know that they have the administrative authority to include any questions that they think are appropriate in whatever vehicle they use to collect their data.
Bob, do you have any
questions
on this topic?
I was just wondering how many counties would be affected. What would be the impact?
Well, we talk about 28 counties that are signed up for electronic recording right now. You're talking about another 59 that have not signed up for it at this point, many of whom said they plan on it, but there's a good dozen, 20 that I would say are probably going to drag their feet, would be my speculation. KU and Larry.
Well, Bill and Fiddler and Tryman are here, and you've probably got people sitting on the sideline waiting, but you know, on the edge of getting it going. And
I think the last time I checked, we probably got, I'm going to say 20% that are not e-recording or are not in the process of getting to e-recording. So that's a pretty significant number. And it's certainly no impediment to, from our perspective, you know, getting them all on as quickly as they want to get there. I would encourage, if I may jump a little away from your question, okay, I would encourage the commission to, when you're developing the language, and I know we're a long way from developing language yet, that you include something that Kay indicated, which is that all document types be included, A, and B, that models 2 and 3 be specified as well in terms of what the definition of e-recording is.
It might be easier to have something saying that the commission sets those standards rather than put it right into a statute.
Whatever. I just somehow or another, you know, we've got an awful lot of counties out there that are doing electronic recording in name.
Yeah.
They're doing only level 3 documents. Right. And that doesn't do much for what we're after. The counties need to be encouraged to do all doc types, and they need to be encouraged to do both models 2 and 3. If they're going to do all doc types, they have to right now. So, you know, somehow or another, that ought to be part of the thrust of what we're doing.
Okay.
That, I think, goes back to my statement, though, too, Bob, where I'm saying that we have to change the wording in our statute right now, which is may, which is permissive. Mm-hmm. And so what we need to do is make that our standards from this group, recorders shall or will or whatever the term is.
Scott?
Mike, I'll echo what Bill was saying. I think if you're taking a stab at this, I think the umbrella should be as wide as you can make it. I think that's kind of what Bill was saying there. But from our side, I don't know what percentage of the counties aren't e-recording off the top of my head, but those that aren't, for them to start requires no financial ramification upon them. It would not cost them a dime to get the e-recording and get started with us. The reason they're not is because there's just not that jolt. I think they're going to have to be provided that jolt, quite honestly.
Scott and Bill, both of you, this question. If some mandate came about in terms of a date in the future for counties to have to offer it, mm-hmm. how far out would that need to be in order for you to accommodate and bring all of your counties on board?
It's a very short order, Mike. It's a non-issue, really.
I got January 1 of 12.
Yeah. Okay.
I got that yesterday.
It really could happen very quickly.
Okay. Okay.
We do it one day earlier.
You do it the year before, right? You do it yet this year? Okay. Well, it's good to hear competition is still alive.
And we'll be happy to encourage both of them.
And let me just ask, we've got Mark Ladd here from Simplify. What issues do you see as a submitter, an aggregator submitter, in accommodating all the counties in a given state if they were to happen to have a date in the future? Is that even an issue for you, Mark?
No, similarly, it only takes us 2 or 3 days, actually, literally, to implement a new county. So it would not be an issue for us, and in fact, we would enjoy it a lot. And again, I would echo the sentiment that both Bill and Scott made about encouraging all document types. From our submitter's point of view, from our customer's point of view, the more document types that are available, the more likely they are to utilize the service, as opposed to having to split a closing package or do some of their transactions one way, some of their transactions another way.
Yep.
If they can go all electronic, they are that much more eager to embrace it.
Yep. Let me ask the title industry folks that are here. Marty, what would it take? How big an issue is this for you? Would you like to see something of this nature?
I think you get rapid support for certain from my company and from in anticipation. Some of us had talked to Jeff Carlson and sent some voicemails, and we actually held a board meeting yesterday just to discuss this in anticipation of what you were likely to be discussing without knowing the specifics of, say, the date that you would be putting forward. But we wanted to show some kind of support, so we came up with a resolution saying that the MLPA would endorse the ERC's efforts to request legislation to require all Minnesota counties to be e-recording enabled by January 1st, 2014. I'm assuming after hearing this, we can move that date up if you want it. And that all CRBs and Welsh disclosures be submitted electronically by the same date. And we tied the two together. So you can require the title industry to submit them electronically. It was tied together with the counties being enabled so that when we change to our one process, we know we're going to be able to do all the documents electronically. It wouldn't necessarily have to go together. Yeah, you could require us to do the ECRBs and well certificates electronically without requiring the counties to all the counties to accept all the documents electronically. But we're so anxious for you to get to that point, we prefer you tie both together.
Okay. One item I just share, I talked to our county assessor, and he said that as far as assessors around the state go, their assessment year is October 1 through September 30. So he said, if whatever date or year you pick, we would prefer to see it start on October 1. Otherwise, we're going to have part of the year done
with paper and part of the year done with electronic, and we'd rather have it all start on October 1, whatever year it is you pick. He said he'd just as soon have it start this fall, if he could get the state to do the upload-download thing. But that isn't going to happen by October 1 of this year. But anyway, that was his comment. He says assessors will be concerned about a date that you pick if it's other than October 1. Again, something I wasn't aware of, but throw that out so that you're all at least aware that's a concern on their part. Is it an insurmountable issue? No. But they'll have split data, and they'll be concerned about it. Other thoughts from members, from audience? I think Janelle and...
I would just ditto everything both Marty said and Bill and anyone else. One of the biggest things that might this goes to your issue of the 208, it is difficult to, I mean, we do try and maybe try to ask the staff to do the UL certificate, but when they're doing an entire package, it's hard to just pull that out. So that's going to increase, if we can do the whole package, it's really a turnover for him.
As far as commercially goes, absolutely, yeah. And whether it's October 1st or January 1st or July 1st of any year,
that's work
with it. Let's just set it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you're talking about several different things here now.
We got a whole lot of things on the table. Mm-hmm,
because
so.
The Department of Revenue, I understand that they at some point in the future may want to dictate that all of them get filed electronically, and I certainly would support that if download upload capabilities there until it gets there. Anoka County isn't really interested in participating in the full blown ECRV until they have that capability available, because it really doesn't save us any time and effort if I still got to create a file to send to them from all the paper certificates that get sent in. I still got to do all the entry on those, so it really doesn't save me any time. But if at some point in the future they want to dictate that, I'd certainly be supportive of that. And if October is a good date, and I'm sure it would be for our office as well, because that is when they kind of wrap up things and start a new year. And as far as the commission goes, I think we should look at moving forward with requiring the counties or the all counties to participate in electronic recording, and I like the idea that if you're sending in a document electronically, it certainly needs to be accompanied by, if it requires one, an EWEL or an ECRV, whatever the case may be. Otherwise, I really don't want to get into a mixed bag of having some to deal with some paper somewhere along the line on those documents that get filed electronically. So I think all that's well and good. I think the County Recorders Association, if I'm not mistaken, has a legislative committee meeting coming up real soon.
Yes.
And I think that if we're going to pursue this, we certainly would want the Recorders Association and the Auditor Treasurer Recorders Association to be on board with this, because they may get called to find out whether or not they're in favor of this as well. So we need to get the support of those two organizations in order for the counties to move forward with, being on board with this. So I think we want to talk to those two legislative committees to see if we can't get them to participate in this process as well, if we want to head in that direction. And I think it's a good idea, because if we don't, we're still going to have some counties that won't ever get to electronic recording just because they don't think it's necessary for their volumes or whatever. So I think, from the vendor's point of view, it's easy for them to become electronically capable with those that have the standard packages out there. And it looks like the customers really want this in order to, move forward with the getting their systems up to speed as well. So I think we want this to be a success in Minnesota. I think it's a good idea to make it mandatory that we can all accept. I would not support having all documents electronic at this point in time, because I don't think we're ready for that yet.
No, but I think Bill is saying all the ones that we've identified and established in the standards,
Well, yes, I think you're going to, you got to accept all documents. Yeah. I agree with that, but I don't think that we're at the point where we can mandate that all documents be filed electronically.
No,
also.
No.
I don't think we're at that level either, but no. I do have to say that as a county that does e-record and my volumes every month increase in e-recording, I would love to see a lot more counties e-recording because my volumes would go up e-recording. I do not want to mess with the paper well certificate. I know that my audit assessor is on board with the ECRV, even though we haven't, you know, we've e-recorded an ECRV, but we haven't done the full package yet simply because we haven't got the title company that I'm working with to do it. And that's kind of an issue. So I know my staff and I really want this to come about simply because we've done it. We've got the habit down, the practice down, and all those things, and so it just definitely saves a lot of time and effort, just like Kathy was talking about, all the efficiencies that it happens in her office by doing an online document. It happens in our office, too. I think that, you know, Jennifer and you and the recorder people here and Mark and stuff, too, will understand that when we bring this forward, I think probably our most difficult parties will be A, the recorders who are going to let out a loud voice on this, but MLTA has brought this up before. Last spring when I spoke there, the comments came up, well, what about your TAC funds? And that it's a very, very valid argument. That money was set aside for exactly this purpose, and as Mike pointed out, in legislation. And we have to use that. This is, it is time. It's time that we do this. Our next biggest battle, of course, is going to be our auditor treasurer's office. And yet, they really aren't necessarily playing that big of a role in the ECRB as is the assessor's office. So I think those are going to be the battles that we're going to be facing, is changing that mindset and doing it very, very quickly.
I had Bill and Mark and Janelle. We can go on. Bill,
Janelle, please, right. First.
No, thanks. I'm just trying to, I mean, from your perspective, from the county recorders, is there somewhere a legitimate stumbling block to prevent this, or is it changing that mindset? I mean, I am assuming the financing is there. I'm assuming the technology is there. So whether it's a year from now or 3 years from now, is there really a legitimate stumbling block?
The money will be the first one, I think. That will be the first excuse. I mean, use it that way. The mindset would be, well, I'm going to retire. I don't want to get into this right now. I don't have enough volume. Well, I don't have enough volume either because nobody else is doing it. If everybody else does it, I'll have volume. And so will every little small county doing it. It's a mindset of changing those habits. It really is a mindset issue. Our vendors have made it very easy for us to do this, and we are supposed to have had the money a long time before.
Yeah, now I would agree with Kay completely. I don't think there's any legitimate business reason. The one question I had today, and I've heard answered by the vendors, if we set a date, how long would it take to get them up and operational? And, golly, they're saying, you know, less than 6 months, very easily. One would be this year, one would be the next year. That one I heard. But anyway, I mean, that would be the only question that I would have. The money is there. They've all gotten money. That fund has been in existence since July of 05. This was the primary thing in which it was to be used for. That might be an excuse, but it shouldn't be. It's not a legitimate excuse, let me put it that way. The issues are just what Kay's talked about. You know, some recorders, well, I'd rather not deal with ACH payments. My auditor treasurer doesn't want to verify who's getting the money or how do I, they don't want to do the mortgage registry tax and so forth. And how am I going to do that? Am I supposed to take that over and take it away from them? Then I'm into a fight. I don't want to get into that political battle. And I mean, those are the little nuanced things behind the scenes, which to them are big issues. To you and I, they're not an issue at all. But they need to be addressed and dealt with. And some of us are going to have to deal with that, I think, on the MACO side to start working and pushing and promoting that those things have to happen.
It's something we've let slide for too many years, too.
Yep. I think an example of not having an auditor here on this commission for the last year was also part and parcel of neglect, and I should have probably pushed it sooner than getting somebody that would participate and engage. But we're there now, and I know that Larry will be a wonderful spokesman with the auditor treasurers around the state.
So now that I'm a real auditor.
Now that you're Bill, yes.
You're touching on what I was had rumbling around in my head, and that is, I think we would do a great disservice by failing. If this legislation fails, it's going to set it back 2 years.
Oh, yeah.
We can't fail. We must succeed. I think part of the success is mounting education processes to all these various audiences that would have some reservation or question or doubt, be they legislators, auditor treasurers, whomever they may be, recorders. And we certainly have the wherewithal here and to put together some good pieces of education for any audience. To a certain extent, we're singing to the choir here in this room. We all got our hand up, right? But there are some out there that don't, as we've identified. So I would encourage and volunteer to formalize an education process, putting some tools together for different audiences, and making sure that the people who are going to be making these decisions, making these calls, understand what electronic recording is, they understand what the obstacles are and how they can be overcome, and the benefits of electronic recording. I think this commission owes itself, not to fail on this legislation.
Gosh, put the pressure on.
Yep. Well, and I think that's why we want to start early. We want to talk to all the various constituents. And quite frankly, if we're going to do this, I'd like to see this to be kind of a joint effort, much like what the 05 bill was. I can't envision anything more favorable with the legislature than for them to see county government coming together with title industry, banking industry, legal community, and vendors asking something to move this state into the 21st century, and it's not going to cost any money, no fees, no taxes, anything like that. I mean, that's a winning proposition if I've ever heard one over at the legislature in this environment that we're in today. Now, if you were asking for taxes or fees, it would be a whole different story. But it certainly worked in 05, and I don't think if we've got that whole coalition together again, I can't see any reason not to to gather support. And Bill, I think you're right. We probably need more education on our side of the House, meaning recorders, auditors, treasurers, than perhaps the title industry needs or the banking industry needs now, and probably, the legal community maybe needs a little bit too.
Well, legislative.
I think the legislative committee, we could easily come back to the legislative group. Well, a lot of them aren't probably there anymore, but some of them are. And go back and say, we had this fee bill and this money was built in and this is the purpose we're using it for. So we just wanted to come back with some legislation and to show that we proved this purpose. I think we'd look good going in that.
The objection that will come,
because we'd have support from
The objection that would normally come would be from an organization like the Association of Minnesota Counties. If there's a mandate, they always object to mandates, especially unfunded mandates. Well, I would argue to them, this is a mandate that has been funded for 6 years already, and it hasn't been implemented yet. And that's what's there, and unlike most mandates the state gives where there isn't money, this is one that you all stood up and fought for money to be there for it. So that's why I think that's, a little different situation than AMC normally sees. But again, Mark?
Along those lines, Mike, from our parochial point of view, would be very supportive. And as one of the longtime recording evangelists, I'd be very supportive of it. So I don't want this to be interpreted as any objection, but rather just somewhere where you're going to have to look. I'm not aware of Minnesota's UEDA and RPERA legislation, how it's exactly drafted, but I know that both of those model acts specified that they needed to be optional on the part of counties or on government agencies. So It would just be, you know, that's one area where you want to look and see how is your UEDA and your PARA legislation drafted. Do you need to do some amending of that in order to make this mandatory? And obviously, if you have the support of the county's association, that makes it that much easier to smooth, you know, to grease those skids. So just a practical observation.
Jennifer?
Just two quick comments. One, I'm meeting with the chair of the Legislative Committee for the Auditor Treasurers tomorrow morning, and this is on my agenda to speak to him about. So I'll be talking to him about this tomorrow morning. And the second piece that I'm not sure where this is at, we had talked about the recorders having an opportunity to attend the AMC conference and maybe present. I don't know if that ever was accepted or if that went forward or not.
I haven't heard if it's been accepted either. I know Susan Roth was in charge of that, and the deadline, I think, is passed. I believe it was the end of July, and I haven't heard anything, so we might want to check with, yeah, that'd be
so we can maybe
perfect opportunity to then, yeah,
this.
Because we've already, and part of that theme was our working relationship. So we were, like what we were doing, working with the Veterans Association and the MOM system, the marriage system, and things like that. So that this would actually be a very strengthen it. So we'll have to find out right away. I'm Susan, I think.
And then just for everybody's note, there is a Recorder's Legislative Committee meeting a week from tomorrow. And this topic of moving electronic recording forward and the possibility of legislation will be discussed at that meeting. So this is probably the first public meeting that there's been a discussion about this, but I hope there will be a lot more in the next number of weeks and months. Let me ask, what does the commission think we should do at this point? Continue to have various groups talk about this and bring it back next month? Do we need to create a subcommittee to look into this yet at this point? Or are we better to just wait till we hear back from the various legislative groups, particularly the auditor, treasurer, and recorder groups? I'm throwing that out as questions.
I think maybe we need to set up a subcommittee to start investigating this. For instance, like, you know, looking at the UEDA and UPERA stuff, that would be one minor thing to do, just to review other legislative, you know, options. Maybe we could really create, combine all committees in brief language that would, you know, like the first draft of language. And we really need revenue here to talk to them also. And maybe, well, you know, Mike, if you need to go further up to see if there's some objection to going on board with this. And now we've got a resolution from MLTA, so it's kind of like moving forward. We also need to check with the Bar Association, so we would need Eileen involved with this.
Right.
And the Bankers Association, which we would like to have gotten Terry involved with, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But Kevin's still chair of the Real Estate Legislative Council.
Kevin, and I
talk to him on a regular basis, and I've talked to him about this specific subject before. I anticipate that there will be support there as well, but I'll mention it to him that we're looking at this now seriously.
So maybe a subcommittee would work, and then maybe at the next meeting we could have all these interested parties invited to come to have a more formal discussion on moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Well, really, when you think about it, the only place that there should be any pushback would be from the counties, because
the submitters,
you know, they don't really have to do anything different. It's the counties that need to step up and make it available. So we're hoping the submitters are
maybe get
on board and certainly supportive, but it's the pushback that only come from the recorders and auditor treasurers, from my perspective. I don't know who else would push back on this.
Maybe we'll get MACO and the Recorders Association and the Auditor Treasurers Association a representative to.
I would like, it would be nice if we could go to our legislative meetings, or I could go to the Auditor Treasurers have a pretty strong statement from the commission early on, so that when we meet next week, you know, it's not as much of, well, should we do this? Let this be fun. It's more like, this is happening.
Jennifer, why don't you take this message and you comment here. I would take back that this commission is very committed to exploring the possibility of, at some point in the future, establishing a date when electronic recording option will be necessary for all counties.
And then that too.
I've heard that from three of the four commission members here today, and there's a fourth one sitting to my right that hasn't particularly espoused his position.
I think it could be even a little stronger than that. I mean, I consider taking Marty's statement and adopting that. Because I think that summed it up pretty well.
His was a little further out than the one.
We didn't envision, given the history of electronic recording, that it would be happening as quickly as we'd like, so we
the realist in the group, I see.
That's Minnesota Nice.
But I think that summed it up, and I certainly haven't heard anything today indicated except what Larry said. Everyone represented here today is all in favor of it. We know we have some education and outreach to do, but as a goal, I think everybody supports it.
Yes. Mike, earlier this summer, the commission sent out that Survey Monkey to the counties, and one of the questions in there, I believe, spoke to a date certain for making electronic recording a reality in their county. Do you know what the results of that survey was, or were?
Well, I alluded to it at the beginning. Okay. I don't have the specific numbers, but it was overwhelmingly not a problem.
Okay. What was the date
of the survey? We got 60 some out of 87 counties that responded, which was an incredible survey response.
Yeah.
And there were very few that said it would be a problem. There was about, out of the 67 or so that responded, there were only about three or four where that would be an issue. But those that didn't respond might also be more inclined to be in that category, but I don't know that. It was one of the survey results on the Survey Monkey that was one of the better things that we got back. But, again, what date you're thinking of for some of them, as long as it's past when I have to run for election again or when I retire, there's half a dozen of them there that are, I think that's the criteria for them. Let my successor deal with this when I'm gone in 2 years.
Sure.
There's a little bit of that out there. So.
And there was a date used in one of those questions. Do you recall what the date was?
Yeah, I don't recall.
Wasn't it 2014?
I don't recall. It was close up.
I thought it was 20.
You and I kicked around.
I know.
You can't remember.
That's been May, you know? Right. It was May.
I'm older than you are. You have a better memory.
So perhaps we could shoot, since that date is already in their minds, in the forefront of their minds, why not use that date?
We decided to move it up closer, if I remember right.
I think we were aggressive in 2013.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
I think we were too aggressive at first and said 2012, and we moved it out a year to 2013.
Yeah, you helped us with that.
Yes.
October 1st.
You know, you're younger.
I'm 2009.
October 1st.
You're 2009.
So maybe using that date, if we can just send out a reminder of what that date was. That's the date that's fresh in their minds at this point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And use October 1st
as a
reach out to the assessor auditor office.
In fact, I just wanted to support what Jennifer was saying. That is, it seems to me like it's going to make it easier for you folks who have got various representative groups, committees, organizations to go speak to about this. It's going to make it easier if you've got something in your pocket that says, look, the ERC has passed a resolution that says that we're going to do what, I didn't find the right language for that says we're going to promote this thing and encourage legislation to take effect. It's going to give that person doing the convincing a stronger tool to promote the cause. And I'm sure the language can be developed really that's innocuous enough that isn't going to, you know, commit to a absolute hard thing this moment, but something that is definitely inclined toward moving ahead with passing that legislation.
Maybe Jennifer can send us her copy
of
this statement or whatever.
That I just got from Marty.
Yeah, that you just got from
Marty. Well, if I were to make a motion, I'd like to incorporate about 90% of what was in Marty's.
Right.
What the MLTA put together was sounded very, very insightful and very forward-looking. I would say let's do this for the next month. Let's go ahead. Rob, if you can contact Eileen and work with Eileen to talk to the Bar Association and Brian, as long as Eileen's not here, I'll ask if you would be willing to follow up on that. Let's see where we're at with the Auditor-Treasurer group here in terms of next month. We'll have people report back from those particular encounters, and then I think we can look at establishing a subcommittee to go forward when we've got that feedback from those groups about how do we explore them, beginning to look at who would we want to sit down with to draft legislation. I would love it if we had an opportunity to sit down with Bert Black. This type of thing, Bert is as good as anybody in the state of Minnesota. And he has a history with it, and he could do it a little quicker and with a little more insight than most people can. But I think that would be very, very helpful. I think at that point we could also perhaps adopt a resolution at that next month's meeting that we could take forward to other groups then.
Jennifer's going to be meeting with other groups, so, and...
Right.
Is it legislation we would introduce in this upcoming session?
That's what I would like to see, yes, in the 2012 session.
Then I would say, you know, the faster we can...
Yeah.
Right. I think maybe we should set up a committee. I might want to fast-track it and set up the committee first so we can report out next month on more of these things. I know Rob would love to work on some legislation. I'll volunteer to be involved with a little of that, too. As far as some language, maybe we could get going. And Bob, if you've got you work on...
I was familiar with UIDA. I'd be happy to help with...
If you're interested in that, Mike, I mean, that would get it on the fast track. Mm-hmm. If we hold off to September, you know, we really need to have some language drafted and presented to some legislators.
I know the bar real estate section has very early deadlines in the fall for getting bills, even for them to review them for the upcoming session. So, yeah.
What's the deadline with the bar? Do you know?
I'll have to refresh. Yeah, I know it's pretty early.
Is it September?
Something
like
September
that.
Or October.
Because it's got to be done before the real estate.
The real estate is
which is November 4th is where they approve them.
November 4th.
But the work is all done a couple of months before then.
Yeah.
Mark?
Just a point. This would have to go by the full body of MCRA. So we meet in
January.
Well, even if the legislative committee gives it the blessing, it still has to go to the full membership.
Yes.
So you could have your wording of your bill ready prior to that, but the membership still has to vote on it.
Mark, that's true, but MCRA is just one of those constituents that would be recommending. If this was a commission bill, it would not be an MCRA bill. You'd hope that MCRA is going to support it and be behind it and lobby it and so forth. But I wouldn't...
Can I hear you say this is going to the legislative committee next week?
To talk about the Recorder's Legislative Committee, yeah. Absolutely. They go to all sorts of legislative committees.
Why do you know that, Mike?
But, I mean, this would be a commission bill, not a Recorder's bill. Not an auditor's bill, not a MAKO bill?
The commission would be asking the Recorders Association to support it.
Right.
Yeah. But I understand what you're saying, but how do we ever have a legislative platform? I'm not disputing what you say, But I just don't understand how we've ever had a legislative platform if we have to wait until January to get the full body to approve anything that we're going to do. And the legislative session starts right away. I don't know how that's timely enough. Don't
well,
we,
that's
we
the
way we've
usually done it. Not yeah.
just, you know, no, I'm not just, but I'm just trying to figure out how it's been done in the past because it just doesn't seem like enough time to really have a platform to move forward if you're not acting on it until mid-January.
Well, that was part of the reason we moved the legislative, we moved our winter conference up into January.
I think we vote on the platform, the legislative platform gets voted on at this upcoming meeting, the joint meeting, which is usually in October, and we vote on it then. But I don't think that the whole body votes on a piece of individual stuff, and on individual legislation, or particularly anything from the ERERC, which is, you know, recommend it for Mako. Yeah. I think we're all right by doing this.
Yep. I mean, they're going to know it before anybody else. And they've always gotten copies of the joint legislative platform. If anybody's got a concern at the conference, they can bring it up. I don't think session starts until February this coming year. This is the so-called short session.
In January.
January, is it?
Mm-hmm. Even though it's supposed to be the short session.
When in January?
Then, it's like the 26th or something.
Oh, it used to be February.
It's, yeah.
They want more of this? Okay. And what's the adjournment date?
Well, they might, in hopes that it'd be earlier, because it is the short session. I think it's still the third Monday of
May.
May.
It's always, they'll never get done early, you know that, so it's always better to let them start later. You got so many weeks of agony you have to put up with. Okay.
Larry's seen if he can find the bylaws. That maybe we could get an answer on that too.
Would it be helpful for us to adopt some version of Marty's statement today?
I think it probably would, yes. You got it, Jennifer? Marty?
Did someone give it to me?
Who's got it?
Do I have it for the minute?
I don't have it anymore.
It sounded great. I just can't remember what it was. Perhaps Sally.
Do you want me to read it, or do you want it?
Yeah, that would be helpful, Sally, or somebody.
Well, it says MLTA, but endorse the ERERC. Efforts to request legislation to require all Minnesota counties to be e-recording enabled by 1/1/2014 and that all CRVs and well disclosures be submitted electronically by the same date.
So we can just say the ERERC proposes to introduce legislation by the date whatever we had before, and that would be about all the changes we would need. Mm-hmm. Unless we wanted to ask something specific about, you know, we plan to contact stakeholders, something along that.
You might want to say something about all commission-approved documents or whatever by then, so that mm-hmm. or things that haven't been approved yet.
That will, yeah. And I guess I don't. You think we need legislation? You think it's all? You don't. The commission's got the authority to set standards.
But we have the authority to set standards, but we don't have the authority to make it mandatory that counties.
Follow
them.
Oh, no. The only thing we don't have the authority to do is to mandate the counties have to do it. Once they engage, they have to follow the rules. That's the difference. They don't have to engage right now, and that's what we're trying to change, to make it mandatory that they have to engage by a given date. Once they're engaged, they have to follow the rules. That's what I've read.
Then they better be recording all real estate data.
Yeah, I agree. I think we can come down on that one right now. I don't think we even need legislation, but maybe we ought to explore that to see. I think we've got the authority to deal with that right now. If you're electronic recording, you have to, but I don't think we've ever discussed that as a standard, per se.
I guess I maybe one of those things you assume that once somebody signs up, they sign up for the whole package, but they don't. And I suppose it's real simple to do a Model 3 SAT or release and not do anything else and say you're e-recording and do 10% of your documents that way and wham, bam, huh?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Anyone want to make the motion here that I think I heard Bob already make it?
I so move.
Do I hear a second?
I'm very with
something. I need yes. Some help on the motion.
Don't confuse us with the back. We're ready for the motion. Did I hear Kay, you seconded
it?
Yes,
I'll second.
It's been moved and seconded for the commission to move forward to seek legislation to mandate electronic recording by counties at a date in the future. Although, any discussion? Hearing no discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carried unanimously. Now, I think for next month, all right, let's talk about, I agree, we need to get some legislation drafted at least to take a look at something. Where are we best to turn for that? I was thinking of Eileen, but she is not here again today. I was also thinking it would be very beneficial to be able to sit down with Bert Black, because I think Bert knows most of those areas very well.
And he's been involved in all previous legislation.
Yep. Who would like to join me in trying to sit together with Bert to kind of go over that? Kay, you want to do that? Let's see if we can get a time.
Rob
you want to, you interested?
Sure.
Bob, you interested?
Could you try to help?
Yeah. Well, why don't the four of us try and see if we can sit down with Bert and see if we can get his attention? I'm more than willing to go down and catch him after the meeting here today and see if he's available and get a time set up. But we could try and sit down with him and at least pick his brain on the legislation and see if he would be willing to give some suggestions and take a look at it, which I'm sure he will. You and Kevin,
I'll touch
and Eileen, see if you can touch on that one.
Yeah.
And if you can report back for next month.
Mm-hmm.
We'll report back on the draft, see if we can come up with some draft legislation for next month. And then Jennifer, if you're available, if not, I'll report back on what the recorders did. Hopefully you can report back on your discussions with the auditor treasurers.
Sure.
The Enlightened Group. And if you need any help, the guy with a bad shoulder over there is available.
Well, my audience tomorrow is friendly, so I'll go.
And discuss with her what might be a better approach to deal with the Auditor Treasurer. I had a long chat with Pam Heron from the NACO president about what this is going to mean going forward in the future and why it's so critical that they have somebody on this commission. Anyway. Well, are we okay with that for now?
Absolutely.
Yep.
Let's move on to another item I added was the Legislative Coordinating Commission.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you all. Appreciate it. Legislative Coordinating Commission has, again, initiated following we're finally back in business again. Discussions with AMC to provide some administrative support to the commission. And there will be some discussions going on here in the next few weeks concerning that. Greg Hubinger has sent another copy of the contract that would basically provide that AMC would do the staff work of sending out notices, taking minutes, and then submitting the information to the LLC who would continue to maintain the website. And we continue to post information on the website and the minutes, the tape recorded minutes on the website. That's kind of what the contract arrangement talks about. So that will be discussed. The LCC has indicated that they would continue to be willing to schedule a room in this building if that's what the commission wanted to do. Or if we wanted to meet over at AMC, that's a possibility of meeting over at AMC. That's just a couple blocks to the north of this building, and at least it
non-legislative times of the year, there's parking right there in their parking lot. And they have a pretty big conference room there for those of you that are familiar with it. But that's some administrative activity that's going to go on here before we meet again in September, so I thought I'd just share that with everybody. Why don't we get on to other subcommittee reports? I think the trusted submitter was pretty well covered here. Even though Jeff wasn't here, I think he did a good job of having representation here. So I think we heard loud and clear what trusted submitters want. County Recording Group. Recording packages that include mortgages and assignments. This is the old proverbial package, or the old issue that comes about. How do you get the mortgage number onto the assignment when they come together in a single package? And we had, and Tom, I'm going to ask you to help me on this. We had a telephone conference call on this topic and multiple document submission. And I'm trying to remember all that were on the call, but Dallin from Simplifile was there, and he had explained pretty clearly that this is not a problem. He didn't think it would be a problem for any vendors to deal with this multiple documents in a package. And from what I'm hearing, at least most counties are doing that anyway. We may not have a standard for it, but that's what's happening. On the reference number or the mortgage number getting assigned, in the assignment it talks about the reference number, meaning the mortgage number. And the customer doesn't have it when they submit the electronic package. If I remember right, what we discussed as a possible option, as long as the submitter sends some authorization to us saying we authorize you to place the number you give on the mortgage on the assignment, that we're okay. That was my recollection as to what the discussion centered around, and that we would report back to this group that that was what was discussed. Comments, questions, concerns from commission members? Interest, non-interest? What I heard...
There is somebody on the phone. Bonnie's on the phone.
Oh, you should turn the volume up, probably.
I heard it before. Who else is on the phone?
I can't say.
Bonnie, okay.
Got it.
Hi. my concern would be if there are numerous mortgages in the set and they would need to make sure that they would record the assignment that they want the mortgage reference number on right behind the mortgage so that we don't get confused as to what mortgage number they want on what assignment, because we've had that problem before where, you know, we think we're supposed to put the first mortgage number on the assignment and actually they wanted the second mortgage number on the assignment and the first mortgage wasn't being assigned.
I understand the issue, but I'm not a caller.
Okay. So
we have that problem in the paper world too.
Right. Yeah. And when in doubt in the paper world, you call the customer, right?
Yeah.
Or send it back?
Contact them in some way. It's easier to reject now, you know, but the thing is not all of the e-recording, the submitters, the vendors that work with the submitters and the vendors that work with the counties as capture software, don't have the same piece of the same manner of letting us communicate with the end submitter. So in my example in Clay County, we have software that is set up where we can accept a cover page from the customer, but depending on who is submitting, the end user can't necessarily submit the cover page. And that's where a standard would be nice. But there are some submitter software packages that do have a field that allow the submitter to make a comment, but we cannot catch the comment. So we have a communication gap there, and it really would be helpful to have some standard set up there so we could all be communicating with the end user, using some method. I don't care if it's a field. I don't care if it's a cover letter that, you know, comes as a helper document type thing. I don't care what it is, but give it to us.
I will just throw out, Bonnie, that this is Rob from First American. We've run into this issue of submitter county communication in other jurisdictions, and I don't know if it's necessarily a standard so much as getting the two vendors, our submitter vendor and the catcher vendor, in an agreement as to how to accommodate that communication. There are some counties that are set up where our system works perfectly, and that county, if they have to do a reject, can indicate why they are rejecting the documents, and it's very clear. There are other counties whose vendors don't provide that interaction or communication with our submission submitter, and it's very difficult, and then we end up having to call that county to find out what the reasons were, specific reasons were for that rejection. It would also, I totally agree, it would be wonderful to have a channel that, not even necessarily a cover letter so much as a dialogue box that could be indicated, sent along with the package, that would perhaps set out a specific order, set out the authorization, or be able to resubmit the package saying, I think you meant by your reject reason this. Please let me know or call me at this number if this is not the issue. That communication would save a lot of time and frustration.
And the reason I say there should be a standard is because I don't want all of the five different submitter vendors that we work with to do it in different ways. You know, I would like it to be one way for all of them and one way for all of us counties to catch it, so we're not looking for different things with different vendors or needing to communicate in different ways for each one. But I'll take anything at this point.
Hello, Mike.
Yes.
Dean passed here.
Hi, Dean.
So Bonnie is hitting on something that we discussed in the wee beginning hours of all this. And if, you know, we've gone the PREA route thus far, why don't we go all in and use PREA's request and response as our standard? There, it's very useful. It's pretty well done. It's even be better when their expert comes out. Probably if all submitters are conforming to PREA document, it's not a huge leap to conform to PREA request response. Something to look at and think about. It would get us exactly where Bonnie says we need to be, and we should have been a long, long time ago.
Well, that communication back and forth between vendor and or between receiver and the submitter is certainly very important. And what those rejection reasons are and people can understand them is critical. I think it's a very good idea, Dean.
Well, what may I ask to repeat the vehicle? What PREA standard for what?
242 response.
242 response.
Standard.
There's a request response mechanism within PREA to facilitate exact.
You are responsible for that, Mark?
I might know a little bit about it.
You want to enlighten us a little bit, if you do remember?
There are fields in the XML for rejection, you know, reasons and error codes and what have you. Right now, I'm a little more familiar with version 3 because that's what I've been immersed in for the last couple of years. But so there are standard codes there. Now, there are fields for that. And the one is a broad enough field that it's just a string field for whatever you want to type in, whatever the county wants to type in for the rejection reason. We worked long and hard to try and see if we could come up with some standard reasons, but that was fun. So there's a string field in there that will allow you to use that.
So the 242 response facilitates and accommodates reasons for rejection from the county. Is there an accommodation for a communication from the submitter back to the county?
Yes. Yep. On the request side, there are some fields, and I'm forgetting the name of them right off the top of my head, but that would allow for that kind of information as well.
Okay. It's there.
Dean, can you extract something and give it to the commission that we could consider for a standard at next month's meeting?
Sure.
I think that would be very helpful to the commission.
We're still at 242. We haven't found a 3.
Well, I'm wondering if we should go to 3. That's my question right now. As long as we're doing this and 3 is there.
And they're finalized, everybody can say thumbs up, rock and roll, let's do it.
Well, it will be next month. Is that right, Kay?
And as far as if you adopt 3.1, generating a backwardly compatible message from 3.1 back to 2.4 is very doable. There's work involved, but it's doable. Going from 2.4 to 3.1, you might not be able to. I'd have to do some double checking on that. So adopting the 3.1, at least the 3.1 structure would probably be a good way to go.
You have access to that one, Dean, too?
Yep.
Any problem that you could think of on that?
No, I haven't spent a whole lot of time on it, but I would assume if we adopt a communication structure, it would probably, with what we just said, make sense to do the 3.1 when it's available. And still allow for at least the communication structure would be at a version, and if we can still incorporate a 2.4 document into that structure, mm-hmm. that's the way to go. Absolutely, okay. No doubt about it. Then we can both have the 3 document structure and the 2.4 document structure available to be useful. So people, all they have to do is change their communication structure, and everything else can.
Okay. If you can give us a copy of that next month, we'll take it up.
I will do my best.
Right now, the meeting is scheduled for the 15th of September, just so you're aware.
I'm putting it on my calendar now.
Is that conflicted for you?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Anything else on this item? We want to adopt anything? I think the item that people commented about with our standard, we're not really permitting multiple documents to be submitted at once. And I think that was one of the issues that we wanted to address, because I know in the conference call that Jeff had, I'm sorry Jeff's not here, because he understands this better than I, certainly the submitters want to have multiple documents being submitted and have that part of the standard. From my understanding is those counties that are electronically recording submitters like Simplifile and eGov and Jeff's outfit, they're all doing multiple documents in their packages anyway. And as I've understood, at least what I've heard from others, is that all the catching apparatus from Bill, you and Scott, you guys at Fiddler, and I'm assuming, Dean, we're going to have that, too, be able to accept multiple documents coming in. So if that's where we're at, what do we need to do in terms of creating that as a standard? Because I think that's what came out of the conference call, is that everybody was in support of having multiple documents being able to come in one package.
Well, if you're talking about having some documents come in, like I think the discussion earlier was, a mortgage then followed by an assignment, and the assignment requires
the recorder to add in the document number of the previously recorded mortgage. I can see where that would be nice to be able to do. However, that does add some complexity to the work that we've already been working on, because right now we've set that, you know, that an assignment requires a reference document number.
Right.
And if there's no reference document number in that field, it's not meeting what we required in our previous standard. That doesn't mean that we can't change that to accommodate for such a an occurrence, but that wasn't what we did before up to this point.
This is Kristen Carlson. So my question is, in other states, are they recording the mortgage and then filling in the document number on those assignments? And then how is that being done in other states?
Mark, you know, or?
Yeah, well, in the electronic world, I
assume. In the electronic world.
Yeah.
In the electronic world only, yeah.
There are various ways of doing it, but, you know, we're able to take the recording information that we get back from the mortgage and then insert that into the assignment. And like I said, there are various ways that we do that.
No, but I think in the example we were talking about, Mark, it's when they come in together as a package,
right,
when you've got the mortgage and the assignment.
That's
so
what I'm referencing.
Right.
I understand that I can record a mortgage and then give you back the, or give the vendor back the recording information for the mortgage, and then they could submit the assignment. But I don't think that's what we're talking about.
Well, and then
and
I
that's not what I heard earlier. What I heard earlier is that the recorders were going to fill in the assignment information.
Yep.
What I'm wondering is, how is that done in other states? So when electronically a mortgage comes in, electronically an assignment follows.
Right.
How are they doing that? Are they then printing off that assignment, filling it in, rescanning it?
No.
What are these? I mean, to me, that kind of defeats the purpose of electronic recording.
You'll have a couple of different options.
What we're doing?
Yeah, a couple of different options that we see.
Just one second, buddy.
You know, one is it's handled by the land records management system, where their system takes the recording number from the mortgage, because that's the system that assigned the number, and then looking for the spot in the assignment where that, where there's a placeholder for it, and inserting that in there, and then also appending that into the image as necessary. Other times it's handled by our system, where it strictly is, they're really sending us back the mortgage information, then we're inserting that into the, we insert that into the assignment and submit it, and it happens quickly enough that there is no gap in between. But it's just a matter of, does it happen at our shop or does it happen at the land records management shop? I've also seen it done where it's a manual input. When the assignment comes up on the screen at the recorder's office, somebody, the staff from the recorder's office, keys in the information, and then it's entered into the assignment. So
how does it get on the image then if it's keyed in at the recorder?
It's
voodoo.
FM?
In some cases, Larry, you can rubber band around it, and that if you rubber band around the area that is that number, you can then command the software to drag that onto the assignment.
Mm-hmm. You know, and that's fine if those are the solutions, but when I'm hearing kind of like the recorders are going to be writing those in, that gives me a little concern.
That leftover terminology from the paper.
Bonnie's doing it.
So right now, all the software that's available to the recorders in Minnesota could accommodate for this, then?
I'm not answering that.
Yeah. Well, can yours?
Yes.
Okay. Can yours, Bill?
And we can work with
to adding it to the image. I'm not talking about just adding it to the index values, but adding it to the image
via that rubber band method that I just described to you.
Tom, how is it handled in Florida? Do they do multiple document packages, and do they do assignment reference numbers?
That was a sore subject, and it was not that. It was originally. Now, I've heard it's made some ground, taken some wings moving forward along that, but in the beginning, the liability of moving that number to the document was one that they hesitated to do. Until the software was sophisticated enough, and I think now they've made some strides.
I'd have to double check.
Yeah. How many states do you find, Mark, that you have a problem with this, where the recorders don't want to put the number in?
I really haven't run across it as far as a problem. An identified issue that needs to be solved everywhere. A problem, I can't say it's been a problem anywhere.
Are you saying it might be a problem because of the modification of a document or the altering of a document?
Yeah, I mean, that's the issue.
We
get the liability that we put the wrong number in, and now we're liable for...
Yep.
Now you can't foreclose, and they're going to come back and sue the county.
We're doing that in the paper world.
Because, in most jurisdictions, they do it in the paper world, so, yeah.
Well, and I'd like to, if we could eliminate that process and eliminate that liability to the county, I would like to take care of that now.
Sure.
Well, as I said, in the telephone conference call, we discussed this topic, and clearly the submitters wanted to be able to submit mortgages and assignments in one package. And we discussed what way can you try to alleviate the recorder from any liability on this, and the issue that came out was the possibility that somehow there's authorization given by the submitter for the county recorder to put the number in that was assigned on the mortgage to the assignment.
Right.
And that was going to have another telephone conference call, and that has not taken place yet. They wanted people to go back and talk to various groups to think about that. But that was what took place in the telephone conference call. So I'm not prepared to want anybody to act on this at this point, but that was at least a possible solution that was going to be round-robin with some groups. Bill?
I mean, there are other considerations also surrounding the issue of multiple document submissions. For example, rejection. If you reject one, do you reject all? Yes or no? And you can certainly see both sides of that. In addition, sequencing, maintenance of sequencing, or commanding the order that those documents are submitted in. There are a lot of very good, meaty things that need discussion around that whole topic.
Yeah. Well, and in that regard, those are important issues. Just both versions 2 and 3 of PREA have XML that will help accommodate that. You know, there are sequencing numbers, there are related document indicators, so the XML is out there that will help accommodate that. You just need to make a policy decision as to how do you work that out on a practical basis. So the technology will support it.
Okay. Well, why don't we move on then? Any other business items? You're awfully quiet.
All the excitement was in the beginning.
Larry, I know you have been out, and I didn't bring up the issue about what other documents are missing and what your subcommittee had done, and I figured you hadn't finalized anything.
Well, actually, I did manage to do a little bit of work on it after I was able to type again. And I did send my spreadsheet to Pam and to Chris to review, and I think that... You know, we're sort of ready to move forward, but now, with this multiple document situation, there's other considerations to make. And I don't know if you want to incorporate that into what we're trying to accomplish as well, because, we're trying to come up with standards for documents. And
right.
Like an assignment requires
a reference number.
A document number. Well, if there isn't one there, then will it get rejected or... what do you want us to do with it? And I think we could dream up some workarounds for that would, based on what I heard today with the request-response situation, and I'm sure there's ways that we can accommodate for that. However, we haven't really discussed that yet, so I'm kind of not really sure what we should do at this point. Pam raised... what are our next steps, and we've already had a you know, a public feedback time on, you know, the additional documents that we put out there, and we tried to accommodate for the responses that we got to that by adding some additional document types to facilitate the rest of the, you know, the concerns of the folks that gave us feedback, and we've made most of the appropriate changes, I think. So Pam wants to know if we need to put this up for public comment again, and if not, I think our next steps would be to update the spreadsheet requirements for the new codes and then pass that on to Mr. Dean Pass to hopefully create the new schemas based on the updated spreadsheet. But it looks like there could potentially be a little more effort here if we're going to look into how to accommodate for the multiple document packets, which I think is an important topic, but ours is a more simplified version where you're getting one document at a time.
Right.
So I don't know what the commission's pleasure is at this point in time as far as what we should do next.
Well, it's interesting when I hear that everybody's doing multiple document packages now.
Yep.
It's part of
it's kind of hard
doing
to operate
business.
Without it.
It's kind of
it
part
is,
of
yeah.
doing business. We wouldn't be able to do it any other way in our practice.
And I don't.
Did you want us to say, "Don't ask, don't tell"?
I didn't ask, Bonnie.
Didn't ask no. what?
Yeah. Well, I think multiple documents is very important. It needs to get addressed.
Yep. How many packages do you get in the paper world if it's a single document?
Yeah.
Maybe 30-40% of them.
That much?
Really?
All the SATs and releases.
Well, we get a lot of SATs.
You know, all the SATs releases
are
all
a lot of those.
Simply because we're so restricted with the deed, and have been so restricted with the deed, which is the main portion of the package. You know, the mortgage isn't come through, but the mortgage is going to have an assignment with it, more generally. It may not have the deed with it, but it'll have the assignment with it, or maybe a SAT and a mortgage and assignment, or you know, something.
I would say 50% of our packages always include the satisfactions as well. So, you know, I
but you're dealing in other states.
Well, but also paper world and
Wells Fargo.
Well, paper world,
again, you know, we're looking at a reality-based recording package for the electronic world as well as the paper mm-hmm. world. The reality world and the paper world is multiple documents,
right.
by far.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's the case, I mean, I've been operating on the assumption that that's what electronic recording is in Minnesota, is adopting the standards for a multiple document package. I would never question whether Bonnie was following the standards or not.
And I'm not worrying about it.
Okay, great.
Okay, so
I don't want to take four steps back here.
No.
How do you parse out the documents? If you submit, it must be something that the submitter can do on their end. If you submit a package and you've got a warranty deed, a mortgage, an assignment, and a SAT, and they're in the right order, and the recorder receives it on their back end, but it comes in as one package, how do you parse that out if you're giving it an initial document number? How do you parse those documents apart from each other to determine, you know, okay, this one's a SAT, this one's the deed, this one's the mortgage, this is the assignment, after the fact, after you've submitted? I mean, I guess I don't know how you're doing it in other states. Could you explain that?
Our submission, we use Simplifile, I think, as everyone knows, and our tool is such that when we put together a package, we upload into that package each document that will be part of that recording package. It's a separate PDF or TIFF that is uploaded into that single package. The recorder, who's our office recorder, I'm talking, puts those documents in a very specific order. That entire package is, on our side anyway, locked into that order as it's sent, and that order is not changed once we set the order for those documents. That is transmitted to the county. I don't know how that interchanges with the county's system. We have had certain situations in which a county system, for example, in Iowa, actually was able to take those documents and put them out of order. I've had three instances where documents have been rearranged. Now, that's over the span of a year and a half of doing e-reporting and submissions in multiple jurisdictions across the country. So
Okay, and I'm okay with you put it in a specific order. It's sent as a package. What I'm wondering is how do they parse that out on the recorder's end? How do you identify that SAT as a SAT? How do you identify that deed as a deed?
That's the image of that.
There's a document.
Right, but if it's submitted as one package,
we don't parse them out. They show as separate documents.
Yeah. They do. Okay.
As a document type.
Right. Okay, so what it is the doc type buried within a certain package.
Sure. It's just like opening an electronic envelope, and when you pull the papers right out of that envelope, each one has a title, a document type, and
That's what I was wondering. I wasn't understanding. I mean, I thought that's how it worked, but I wanted to make sure that was how it worked, because then that may solve our problem with probate papers.
Oh, yeah, and I should have been clear about that on the submitter side, too, Chris. When we upload a document, we have to upload it under a specific document type. So
okay,
if we're
good.
Uploading a satisfaction, we choose the document type satisfaction from the list of available documents from that county.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that makes sense, but that may help with our probate paper question, too.
Actually, the e-recording process is beneficial because the submitter is putting the documents in the order that they want them. The only time that I run across a problem is if there are numerous mortgages and only one assignment or numerous assignments.
Yeah, that gets problematic, but that's problematic in the paper world, too.
Right.
Yes, it is.
And that's where that communication channel is coming.
Right. And in fact, I was going to say earlier on this issue of multiple documents in a package, is actually makes it easier to manage document order.
It sounds good to me, but then we're going to have to figure out what are you going to call it and what are the standards going to call that?
Actually, it's already solved in the standards, I believe, that you've adopted.
Right.
And then the other thing is if you have a deed, a mortgage, a satisfaction, an assignment that are all related, and if you have single document packages, and the deed gets rejected, it's possible then that the mortgage and the assignment get recorded.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if they're in a single package that declares that they are related documents, and that's part of the XML, if all of the documents in the package have to pass recordability before a document number is assigned, and so then you don't get that opportunity for a trailing document to get recorded before the controlling deed.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, it's just what I'm saying is the naming of that package. What do you call it in the standards? You said it's already covered in the standards, but mm-hmm. The individual documents are covered in the standards.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the submitter has a transaction number that they would be assigning to it, and then when it comes into the recorder's office, in our case, we have a WIP number that's assigned.
Yeah, I understand that, but what I'm saying is, what is it called initially?
Package one.
Anything?
Package one.
Package one.
Generally, the title company's file number, order number, that is what is used as the label for the package. Just as our file numbers or order numbers are placed on your recording slip for a paper packet that comes across your desk.
Okay. Okay. And that makes sense to me, and then you open it up in there, and you're able to bring those up to the appropriate doc type.
Right.
And number.
It's the same in our...
Well, you'd have to number them separately.
We're kind of getting down on...
This is a
right.
detailed discussion.
Yeah.
We're kind of getting down on time here, and I guess, Larry, I think we would be better off at this point, if we waited this long for you guys to go back and take another look at the multiple document thing.
Oh, yeah. I don't think it'll be difficult to look at.
What modifications would need to take place from what you've already prepared, or what additional items for multiple packages would need to be there?
Correct.
Because I think what you've done for single submissions is fine.
Yep.
And now I think if we can go back and look at the multiple packages and take into account the PREA 3.1 for dealing with that, and maybe come up with a resolution on how to at least incorporate that into the standard.
Not a problem.
And if that becomes an albatross, we can maybe at least approve next month what we've already done. I don't think we need to go back out in response to Pam's question of standards.
No, because we've already addressed
public
the
comment.
Documents.
Yeah.
The documents, and I think we've got... The document's covered. It's just that we've got some additional little processing issues to resolve.
Right.
That's a good point.
Not a problem.
Any other topic to come up in front of the commission? Next meeting date is Thursday, September 15th, if I've got it right. 1:30, I can tell you time, and we'll let you know location. It may be here at the Capitol, or either here or probably AMC, one of the two.
Oh, okay.
I'd entertain a motion to adjourn.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
Moved and seconded to adjourn. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Thank you very much.
I think they were done.
Thank you all on the telephone.
I think we should have found out who was on the phone.
I'm sorry. I never heard anybody.
There was a stealth person on there.
Make the trip.
Oh, yeah.
I blew it, Sally. I didn't.
That's okay. I never remember that. We have to turn that up.
Oh, Pam Trumbull was on the phone.
I'm still on the
phone. You've been outed.
Oh, goodness. I thought she'd already hung up, Pam.
I should have kept quiet longer.
There's others on the phone, yeah.
Yeah, she sent me an email. Can you hear my dogs barking?
Well, thank you for joining us, Pam.
Yeah, I'm fine.
It was a pleasure.
All right, you take care.